I am Plante on the line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Sam Harris joins me now, the acclaimed performer of Broadway, film, and television, author, and songwriter, has recently premiered his stage production, Ham, a musical memoir on Broadway HD. The show is based on his memoir that begins with his growing up in Sand Spring, Oklahoma. The show chronicles Sam's formative years discovering a connection with music and performing in a Black Baptist church at the age of 15, through to falling in love with a boy, a depression that leads to a suicide attempt, and then going to Los Angeles to pursue a career in show business. His remarkable voice and singing talents bring him to Star Search in its first season in 1983. That leads to best-selling albums, television and film appearances, Broadway, and more. The show Ham moved out west, and it's that production filmed at the Pasadena Playhouse, directed by Ken Sawyer, that is now available for streaming. Incidentally, the original Broadway production was developed and directed by Billy Porter. I'll ask Mr. Harris about the tour de force performance that he gives. That's a vocal wonder to behold. He recounts on stage such powerful moments in his life that one wonders the emotional toll that might take. I'll ask him about the range of his remarkable voice that is on full display in this show, as well as the highs and lows of a life in show business. It's an entertaining show, and Sam will provide a promo code near the end of our interview for a free month of Broadway HD, which you can find at BroadwayHD.com. Sam Harris was hailed by Rolling Stone magazine as one of the top 100 singers of all time. His appearances on Star Search, where he won the male vocalist competition, pulled a weekly audience of more than 25 million viewers. His albums were multi-platinum bestsellers and featured pop, gospel, and theater music. He received great notices for his performance in Cy Coleman's The Life on Broadway, earning a Tony Award nomination in 1997. He's also starred in productions of Grease, The Producers, Jesus Christ Superstar, Cabaret, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, Hair, Pippin, and more. He has also recently published a book of literary fiction, The Substance of All Things. The website for more is at samharris.com. He joined me from Los Angeles last week. Please welcome to the Plante on the Line program, Sam Harris. Mr. Harris, good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Pretty good, yourself?
Fantastic.
So as I was telling you just before we started, how much I enjoyed the show, or the film of the show.
Thank you.
What is it like to watch, especially in this last year or so, where we haven't been able to gather together and watch theater? I'm assuming to perform as well for you. I kind of got nostalgic about sitting in a theater watching a show.
Oh, thank you. That's certainly what we're going for. I mean, with the film of a show, you get, you know, a camera's perspective, a director's perspective. And the only reason to do it, other than to have it, is to see things that an audience in a theater cannot see.
Mm.
You know, close-ups and certain angles or certain lighting that necessarily isn't, you know, visible when you're looking at an entire proscenium and stage. But I, too, miss that. And I think there's something so valuable in a group of people from all different worlds and lives coming together and having an experience universally in which they laugh and cry and think. And I think that the film of the show, because it incorporates the audience, because we see shots of them, because you hear applause, I do think and hope that it does give that sense to a degree, like you were talking about.
Yeah. So the journey from the original book to the,
yes,
the production in New York and then this version that's been filmed, all told, uh-huh, how long has it been?
Well, the book was published in 2014,
mm-hmm,
by Simon & Schuster, and then I did press for it, you know, all over the place, and
mm-hmm,
we, instead of doing you know, readings at bookstores and things, which are typical of a book release, because I'm from the theater, we did them in theaters, and I started interspersing songs, and it started to develop itself. And then when we did it in New York, that, you know, reading version, a couple of producers came to me, whom I knew, one in particular, Susie Dietz, who's just a wonderful person, but a brilliant Broadway producer, and she said, do you want to the show? And I said, well, yeah, that would be fantastic. That was sort of my intention. So Todd Schroeder, who you know from the movie, is my music director and cohort in crime. We both live in L.A. We went to New York and worked with my old friend, Billy Porter, whom you may know from all the stuff that's going on with him. Just won the Emmy. He won the Tony for Kinky Boots. And so we, for several weeks, we developed it with Billy at the helm, encouraging me to make these stories scenes and make them play all the characters and write things that give it, based on the book, a theatricality. And then Billy directed that production in New York. So that was 2015. And then in 2016. Uh-huh. 2015 and 16. And then in 2017, we did it in Los Angeles. And then we remounted it at the Pasadena Playhouse, that beautiful theater, and played it there and then shot it. So 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 20. This is 2021.
Yeah.
And so it was like 7 years in the making.
But I guess that the whole thing is really your lifetime, going back to Oklahoma and right through today. Were you always a ham growing up?
You know, Joe, I'm lucky because I knew what I loved when I was really young. When I was like three, you know, I knew that I wanted to tell stories and sing and dance and make up characters. And then when I was older, I wanted to write. So I was lucky because I knew what my passion was really early. And I have a son who's going to be 13 in April. And I'm like, why doesn't he know what his thing is yet? Why doesn't he know what his thing? And Danny, my husband, will say, Cooper is not, you're the weirdo. You're the anomaly, Sam. Cooper is just a 12-year-old boy who's figuring out what he likes and what he doesn't like. And it's not, he doesn't have to find his, you know, his passion and vocation for the rest of his life at 12. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Stand corrected. But was I a ham? I guess so. Once a ham, always a ham.
Yeah. The show is so moving because first we're astonished, as we have been for 35 years now, at your voice, that marvelous singing I guess shocked a lot of people on Star Search and through the years, and we're moved by the storytelling. And we're moved to tears. We're moved to laughter as well. There are many, many funny parts. I'm still laughing at the one line about you as a kid going to read for the part of Helen Keller and told that Helen Keller has no lines.
Helen didn't have any lines. there's not a lot of memorization.
Yeah. It's such a wonderful piece, and I'm wondering the conversations that you had with Billy Porter when you first thought of putting it on the stage. Did you have conversations about what you both wanted it to look like? Say, I mean, were there other shows that one person shows, if you will, that sort of came into your head as you were putting this together?
I think not specifically, but there were elements, certainly, like I remember when we were doing what's in the show as a Star Search medley, and with every song it modulates, and we talked about the beginning of Dreamgirls, at the beginning of Dreamgirls, the end of the first act, where it modulates every eight bars until it lands on a key, and the excitement of building in that. There's a part of the show that is, you know, heavily influenced by the sort of dark humor and of Bob Fosse and his style.
Yeah.
So there are many theatrical devices that all of us were influenced by, but I don't think we were specific in saying, oh, did you see, you know, whatever, Billy Crystal's show? We didn't do that. But we all understand the arc of theater. We've all of the people in that room had been doing it for a long time and are old enough to know the references. So we were certainly influenced by a lot of things.
Yeah, and it's also a very tiring show, it seems, to perform. I mean, what was that like doing night after night?
It was really, really hard. I have to tell you, it's what I call a prison show. which means you can do nothing else.
Yeah.
You know, you can do nothing else. You can't talk. You can't. I would go to the gym. I would nap a good deal of the day. I would eat protein at certain times and then do the show. Now, that was in New York. When I got here, I have a kid. I have there was homework. There were things to do. I couldn't be quite as precious about myself. But you're right. It makes me laugh when people say, when you're doing a show, an 8-times-a-week show, oh, you're so lucky. You only have to work 3 hours a night. Like, do you have any idea? That's like saying to, a football player, you're so lucky. You only have to play 2 games a week. It's like it requires something that gets you there all the time. You have to be in shape and have the stamina. And for me, as you sort of mentioned, because it's autobiographical, it was exhausting physically and vocally, but really emotionally too.
Yeah.
To sort of live that on a regular basis. But I have learned to walk off the stage and leave it at the stage. So I when the curtain is down, I don't carry that, or I would be a mess, you know.
But it comes through the emotion through various parts of the show. When you talk about attempting to commit suicide, or even beautiful right. moments where you're reenacting conversations with your son, conversations with your father as well, conversations with your teacher, and you wear that on stage. I mean, it's in your voice, it's in your face. You see it physically. I do wonder how you manage to because it is your story as well to leave that on the stage night after night.
Well, I think you have to for just your mental health. Mm. And you know what's different about this? You know, as an actor, if I'm playing a part on a show or in a show on the stage or a TV thing or whatever, you imbue your own personal life experience into that character to give it a reality, right? You go from your own personal experiences, and that makes a character that is fictional come to life. In the case of this, because it really was me and really my circumstances and those other people that I play were real people, it's a different thing because I'm not like substituting stuff. Like, oh, I think I knew what that felt. It's really real. And so that's hard. That was a challenge. But on the other hand, I know how to tap into it because I was there and I know what it smelled like and I know what the light was and I know what the tone was. I know what my fear was or my humor was. So there's a lot there to pull from. But yeah, gotta leave it at the door. Otherwise, it would just be, I think, too much, you know?
And
I think that's true for all actors who are doing emotional work.
Right.
You have to. It's part of the job, I think.
What is it like to know, Sam, that this show is going to be seen by a wider audience now? And especially young people will get to see this. They may not grow up the way you did, over the years now. Might have some elements, some parts of the story that ring for them. And, maybe watching this show might be a sort of light out, if you will, to better places.
Well, I hope so. I really hope so. I think, not to sound like corny or remotely self-important, because it is just showbiz, but we're storytellers. Those who write and perform, and we're storytellers, and we're at our best when we are reflecting, a human experience. And though the specifics are mine in this show, you just said that you were moved. You know, you just said that you felt something. Well, you and I didn't have the same circumstances in our lives, but you could relate to it from whatever your personal experience is. So I do hope that some of the messages in it are helpful to people. But I really just hope that, I hope that the show is universal in that everybody can also, you know, because there's an overriding theme, too, of sort of being different and a misfit and having this sort of passion and dream and obstacles. And who among us has not felt outside,
sure,
has not felt a misfit, has felt like they were faking it or that they weren't enough? And they, you know, that's one of the themes of the show is what is enough? What is enough? And all of us have felt that. So it's my facts, but it's everybody else's experience in some way, I hope.
Yeah. So it's more than a one-man show, too. You mentioned Todd Schroeder. A marvelous accompanist and composer in his own right. But in this show, he's more than a piano player, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's definitely. I mean, he's on stage, mm-hmm. just the two of us, and he plays brilliantly. He also, you know, we co-wrote some of the songs, and he did the underscoring, which is so important. But also, we've been working together for almost 30 years. So we kind of breathe together, and it makes it, that's kind of what makes it work, is our partnership. But he's also featured in that he participates, you know, as a character here and there. And in that part that I talked about as the Fosse section, the sort of Chicago section,
uh-huh.
he's sort of the devil in my head, you know. But he's extraordinary, and he's quite brilliantly, not only gifted musically, but his head, the way he thinks, and he knows me. I don't want to also go without mentioning that Billy did the first productions in New York, but a director here in Los Angeles, Ken Sawyer, oh, my God, Joe, he is truly, like, he should be known everywhere. He is so inventive and really pushed me and really came up with visuals and the way that we use the stage and the props, and he's just so smart. And he did all of the patterns for all the beautiful images that we're seeing on those screens. I'll tell you what. One of my gifts, I'll tell you, is like that I know how to surround myself with great people. Because it ain't me, baby. It ain't just me. Everything I do is elevated by what they've done and given me. And I get to be the mouthpiece. But believe you me, that show is a serious collaboration.
It really is. It's visually stunning to watch because it's obviously not just a film, you know, show.
Mm-hmm.
The elements before and after and over the credits, especially beautiful photographs that accompany the credits. And as you said,
they're the real people.
Yeah,
the people that I play in the show, you get to see what they look like.
Yeah. It really is a very fine production. I mentioned this voice, this voice that has captivated us for these many years. One is obviously born with it, but it also takes time and work to develop. How do you maintain it? I mean, do you think you sing better today than you did, say, 35, 40 years ago?
Hi. Well, first of all, during COVID, I'm barely singing at all, which is rough because it is a muscle.
Yeah.
It needs to be, you know, worked out and maintained. And I'm not doing a lot of that. So, like, tonight, later, I'm doing an interview that's I have to sing live, and I'm like, oh, how am I going to pull this out?
Yeah.
But I think I'm a better singer. I think I'm a better performer. I think I'm a better storyteller. I have a lot of life experience that has given me richer perspectives on things.
Yeah.
I think my voice is richer too, but I mean, who's kidding who? I don't have as crazy a range. I still have a very high range, but I finally, a few years ago, Todd and I were putting a new show together, and I realized I was singing all these songs that, you know, are sort of required when I do a concert in the original keys. I'm like, and Todd was like, what are you doing? What are you trying to prove? You know, you don't need to, you are in your 50s. You don't need to sing like the same keys that you did when you were in your 20s. And I felt like I was cheating somebody or it was a cop out. But he was right. It's ridiculous. I don't need to sing some of those notes. No one does.
The thing I noticed, because I went back to YouTube and then watched some of the early clips and then watched, obviously, you in the show, Ham. And the voice is much richer, and I think it's much better because it does have the color, if you will,
Thank you.
The years.
Yeah. Oh, there's a few years of color there.
but it's also just, I guess he was right that you are still hitting the. I mean, it doesn't sound different, if you will, at the same time.
Thank you. I think that's probably because it sits in my voice the same way it sat in my voice when it was a different key. But, yeah. I mean, and then there's sometimes in my life where I thought, why couldn't I have been James Taylor? Why couldn't I have been somebody who just sings sweetly and doesn't have to work too hard? Why did I choose these songs that I'm having to, like, you know, slip my wrists and go out there and do this? But that's always been the music that I have been attracted to. And I also realized something in these last few years, that I have had this theme. This just occurred to me. If I look back at all the songs that I've sung, there is this theme of hope and triumph over adversity and unity and getting through stuff. And I think that's kind of my purpose, you know, with what I write, certainly with Ham. It's funny and it's entertaining, but I really hope that it's a message of, you know, hope.
And it's perfect timing coming out now for a wider audience because, as I mentioned off the top, you know, we're starved for shows. But there's something that one can glean from this show. I mean, you know, maybe help us get through the day, help us get through the week, if you will, especially in these times.
Trust me, no. Wow. Yeah, I think we do need to go get, I mean, for me, I don't know about you, but I have to really pull myself back from being a news addict and taking on everything that's happening in the world, in our country right now, in the world right now. And so I am grateful when I find something that lets me escape, takes me to another place, makes me laugh, and actually allows me to cry and feel something because I have so much pent-up stuff going on from the world, from the crises of the world. And when I can find something to relate to as a human being, as a one-on-one kind of thing, I know it helps me. And I really hope that's what the show does. Andy Pachogel, who directed the film, and I said when he and I had worked on a few things, and I said, you know, what's important to me is that this is a film, that this looks like a film. I don't want it to be an archival movie where three cameras sit in the back of the house and shoot the show.
Right.
And so we have these cranes, and we have these close-ups, and we have these angles, and we have this movement, and we have the audience, because I said it needs to flow like a film. It needs to tell a story like a film and not just capture what was live. And I think he did a beautiful, beautiful job of that.
Indeed, indeed. By the way, I've always wondered, the songs that you sang on Star Search, especially I Am Changing, because there's a marvelous sequence in the show where we can see as an audience your life literally changing, going from Oklahoma to Los Angeles and then, you know, hitting it big on television. Did you choose those songs? Was there someone around you who said, maybe do this on the show, say?
No, I always chose them. And at that point, even though I was I 21 or 22, I had been tooling around in, you know, dumps and dives and places that I could experiment and fail and learn who I was and steal from this one and try this and that. So I kind of had a fairly decent repertoire, and I knew who I was. So in the first part of the season, I was singing songs that I had done. And then as it went on, I would never pick a song before I had one because I didn't want to jinx myself. So then I started going through records and listening to things and going to my favorite artists. And I even did a couple of original songs. So I didn't have anybody. It was sort of my own personal thing. And it was so funny. I was just mentioning it minutes ago. In that segment in Ham, when I'm singing that sort of medley of, and by the way, that's when it modulates, you know, to five songs or whatever. All those songs that I chose during Star Search, I Am Changing, God Bless the Child, It's My Turn, I Shall Be Released, Over the Rainbow. These are songs that are about what I was talking about.
Yeah.
They're about hope and dreams and passion. And psychologically, I don't think that was any small part of why it caught on during Star Search, because you're seeing this green kid who's sort of bearing his soul and singing about wanting something and hoping for something. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it's sort of like, you know, you had these words, this music in you, and then it took you, you know, till today to realize, I mean, how much they meant to the arc, if you will, of the life.
Yeah, I didn't really know.
Yeah.
But I'm still searching for it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm still searching for it, and I'm still trying to find it, especially in times like this. And because I have a son, you know, I think when we're good parents, they really make us be our best. So I have to model that. I have to model being a good person and how to direct our hope and our dreams and being a good citizen and all the things. I have to be that. I don't want to be that all the time.
Yeah.
I want to be a schmuck. I want to cut somebody off on the street because I'm pissed off about something. And being a dad, I have to sort of pull back and look at something on a larger level. So, I mean, I'm still learning and growing, and I keep telling myself the same lessons, hoping that I'll, you know, glean some wisdom from some song.
Yeah. So you mentioned a moment ago that at three you knew what you wanted to do. When you look back at this remarkable career, this remarkable life, as you do in the show, could you have imagined at three everything that's happened to you since?
Yes. I won't be shy about that. I imagined a lot more. I imagined I knew what I wanted. I knew that I wanted to be known for it. I knew that I was talented. And I knew that I was driven. And I had a lot of help and mentors along the way. My father introduced me to music at a very young age and taught me about what was behind music. In the show, as you know, Jerry Blatt was like my director mentor. He changed my life forever. To this day, I think of him every day. And he died in 1989. So I knew what I wanted, and I had people to help me get there. But in short, yeah. I knew I was good, and I wanted to be a star. However, Joe, I did not know that it would lead me to be writing books and things. And I have a new book. You know, Ham Slices of a Life was the first book, which is, you know, what the show is based on, and autobiographical. I have a new book that's literary fiction called The Substance of All Things, which just came out a few months ago. And I did never imagine that I would be writing fiction. So that's a new thing. But I'm always trying to reinvent myself. What's new? What can we try now?
Yeah, and it just seems that everything you've done, you've managed to hit it out of the park. I mean, the notices for
Oh, God, that's so not true. You just don't know about the others. No, my God, I've had so many projects that never got off the ground. I've had... And it's tenacity, too, like this book that I just mentioned, The Substance of All Things. I took 4 years to write that book. Things don't just happen. And I would say if 1 out of 10 projects happen, you're doing well in this business.
Well, I was going to say the notices for the book, The Substance of All Things, I looked them up. They're quite good, aren't they?
They're really good. I was so... thrilled. I mean, they're from all those wonderful book publications that matter.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it blew me away. Again, I know when I do good work and I know when I do crappy work or not good enough work. And I feel very good about my work on this book, but I didn't know it would be embraced in that way. But again, please, you know, you say, oh, everything you hit out of the park, that is so, if only you could be in my life. I have 3 projects going now. If one of them happens, it would be just fantastic. There's a lot of, you never stop. And I always used to think that my idea of success was having choices and just whatever you do goes through and you don't have to work with idiots and you just, and no, and I know this from so many of my peers who have found some success. It never stops. You're always busting it. You're always inventing. You're always developing. You're never sitting by the phone. The real success, you're never sitting by the phone and saying, I hope they call me and offer me this part.
Yeah.
I've never worked that way. But I, you know, I have to keep moving. I'll be honest with you. If I didn't keep moving, I would be one of those people, like through this whole COVID thing, who would just, you know, if I didn't have a family and keep moving with projects, I would be in a dark room pulling the covers up over my head.
Right.
So it's sort of my, being active and creative is also my sort of survival tool.
The last thing I want to ask you, Sam, and then I'll let you go. I'm a huge fan of Cy Coleman. I can't. Every couple of days, I have to put on something by him or songs. And you got to work with him on The Life.
Yes.
What is it like? And not just Coleman, but many others. You know, you grew up listening to them, or you grew up singing their songs, even, and then get to know them later. I mean, what's that like?
Oh, that's the greatest blessing I think of my career. Is that I was never growing up, excuse me, growing up, all of my idols were, you know, they were Lucille Ball, or they were Lily Tomlin, or they were Milton Berle, or they were, or in music, they were Jackie Wilson, or they weren't necessarily my contemporary. So as I've grown up, when I sort of came into this business and I got to work with or be with or befriend and get to know people like Sammy Davis Jr. or, you know, Liza Minnelli, and I were very, 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 very tight for many years. And that's the magic, is to be with these people and learn from them. Gee, when I met Lucille Ball, I could have just died and gone to heaven. And she has influenced me so much in timing and comedy. So with Cy, since you mentioned him specifically, he was like a kid. When he sat down, and this is the secret to his success, when he sat down at the piano, it was like he was 10 years old. Mm-hmm. He couldn't wait to play you what he made up last night. He couldn't wait to teach it to you. He was so young at heart. And I think for any of us who have long careers, we have to stay curious. It's that curiosity of what's going to happen next. What can I try tomorrow? That's what keeps us going. And he was a genius, just a brilliant man. Although I have to tell you a funny story.
Uh-huh.
There's a song that opens the second act. I had a beautiful, fantastic song that opened the first act called Use What You've Got, and then he wrote a song called Mr. Greed that opened the second act.
Right.
And it was a big dance song, too. And I'm a dancer, but I'm not a dancer, you know.
Right.
So I learned the song. Wonderful song, really rangy, all over the place, and it's a big dance number. So we're learning the choreography, and I'm singing the song as we go and sort of putting it in my body, and he walks through the room in one door, across the room, and out the other door without stopping, and on his way, he says, "You're not going to sing it like that, are you?" Everybody just stopped, and I talked to him privately, and I said, "Cy, I will do anything you want. You are the master. I will do it however you want. But please do not humiliate me in front of the company ever again." And which was kind of ballsy of me, you know.
Sure.
And he was so respectful and apologized and said, you know, he was grateful to have me and he loved our collaboration. But he was a little prickly sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. It's astonishing just to listen to his music and it's like watching you. I mean, it looks like it's effortless, and yet you can see how rich and complicated and beautiful it actually is. I mean, the elements in Ham that I'm thinking about still days after watching it. You know, the first thing I have in my mind is, how do you do that, you know, whether it's physically or vocally, emotionally as well.
Well, I appreciate that. I really do, because, you know, it is a lot of work and a lot of building stamina, and it's a complete experience. And I think that's true in a lot of ways. I mean, for Cy, certainly, geez, what a gift, what a talent, and to be in the same room with that and to learn from that And I do. I will say that about myself. I remain curious. I do.
Yeah.
I love, you know where my favorite place is to be? Well, it's kind of wherever I am. If I'm writing the book, that's my favorite place to be. But if I could live in one room, it would be a rehearsal hall.
Mm.
I love to rehearse. I love to experiment and try things that are scary and fail and stumble and discover. It's very hard to get me on stage. I joke about that in Ham, but it's true. I have really, really bad stage fright until I get going. But boy, oh boy, in a rehearsal hall, it's like the freest, most wonderful place to be, because you get to just try, experiment, you know, and fly. And of course, live, when it's happening live and you have all that and you're supported by all these things and this design and these people and, of course, who's kidding who, the love of an audience, then you can sort of let go and just sort of, at its best, kind of fly with it.
Yeah.
When I'm thinking about what I'm doing is where I get in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Hopefully I've done the homework and then I can just shoot out of the cannon and hope for the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam, it's such a pleasure to speak with you today. Congratulations on such a fine show, and I really do hope a lot of people see it, because it's a marvelous piece.
I'm so grateful. Thank you so much. You know, it's on Broadway HD, which is, for those who don't know, is just an incredible channel that has so many Broadway shows and movies, and it's a great place to be, and they've been wonderful to me. And there's an amazing promo going on right now, if I can plug this.
Yes, please.
That it's a free month on Broadway HD if you use the code HAMFM, H-A-M-F-M, and... they've given me this because they love the movie and they want people to see it and want people to come to their channel. But thank you so much, Joe, for this. What a really lovely interview, and I thank you for seeing the movie.
Thanks for this, Sam. All the best.
All right. Take care.
Ham, a Musical Memoir, is available at BroadwayHD.com. Visit SamHarris.com for more information. Sam Harris joined me on the line from Los Angeles, California, in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.